Welcome to another episode of From the Roots Up. My name is Sean Frame, and I'm back with more information, more vigor. Yes, you can imagine it. If you listen to the tone of my voice, you probably know that I had a vacation. And on that topic, I'm going to say, let you know that this week's subject is Western Europe. Yes, I was privileged enough to be able to take a trip to Spain, France, and Portugal. And while I was traveling, I actually made some recordings. I was hoping to record conversations I had with people, but I found that to be a little difficult, just given that often I was talking with people who were working. And so, you know, getting a formal actual interview in with somebody while they're on their job is kind of a hard thing to do anywhere in the world. And so, I do share my impressions, and I do share some of the conversation topics that I covered with folks in those segments. But, why even talk about Western Europe? We sit here in the United States. I'm a United States citizen, proudly born here, raised here, right here in beautiful California. And, proud to be an American, I guess, you know, with the caveat that, of course, you know, all nations have the good, the bad, and the ugly. And, I'm obviously aware of all those things as somebody who's well into my life, well into my late 50s. I would be remiss if I wasn't aware of everything that our country is and stands for. But, you know, I'm an American, and, I'm not afraid of saying that, despite all that. I believe in the promise of this nation. You know, that's really what it comes down to for me. And though, you know, our nation has been incredibly wrong about so many things over its life, the 250 years we've been around, slavery, genocide of the people native to this continent, to name just a couple of big ones. I've also believed that we are, like most people, complicated, and mostly we're good people. We're willing to recognize our mistakes and attempt to right the wrongs of the past and do better going forward. You know, and I've seen that happen in my lifetime too, with civil rights, with reparations to Japanese Americans who were put in concentration camps, and the advancement of the equal rights for all people, regardless of race or nationality, who someone loves, and who fundamentally someone is. I've seen those things move in the right direction in my lifetime. But let's be clear, this kind of progress isn't a straight line. I'm not sure if the arc of the moral universe bends toward progress. I know it bends back and forth. And I gotta say, we may be in a time when, you know, things that I've seen advance in my lifetime are actually moving backward. And I find that to be tragic on so many levels, because, we had a pretty good thing going, recognizing the problems of the past and trying to address them and to try and move forward and be better. So, as I traveled through what we used to call the old world, I thought it might be good to share some of the perceptions I was having while traveling and hopefully bring it all together with some context, wrap some context around the thoughts I had And that's what this show is going to be today. It's a little different format than we usually do. I don't have a guest on today's show. My guest is me on vacation and the musings I have. And we'll see if you can recognize that it's even me. I imagine I'm going to sound a little different. And obviously, I was not, you know, professionally recording. So you're going to hear lots of background noise and some flavor of the places I was. You're going to hear my inner monologue, and I'm going to share, you know, moments from key conversations I had. Most importantly, I hope we'll learn something together, and maybe I'll learn something about myself today on From the Roots Up. This episode of From the Roots Up is brought to you by The Torch Club, Sacramento's premier live music venue every Wednesday to Sunday. Check them out at 904 15th Street in Sacramento or online at torchclub.net. We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack, taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. Crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. Sensitive young old men. We're so envious of your
etiquette. Demands and tells on your loss. Let's talk about Europe and the countries I visited. Let's talk about economies first. I think it's an interesting way to really try and understand nations and regions of nations. In this case, I was in the European Union or EU. The U.S. is still number one in total gross domestic product with around GDP of around $29 trillion. The European Union is second with about $19 trillion in GDP. China is a close third with about $18 trillion in GDP, but is rapidly expanding their GDP and expected to pass the EU any day now if they haven't already. As a nation, individual nations, France is seventh in global GDP, Spain is 14th, and Portugal is 46th. So, you know, we here in the U.S. are still quite a bit beyond the EU and China in terms of the size of our economy. But what does that really mean? Well, fundamentally, the size of a nation's economy determines what a nation can do for the people who live in it. And, I mean, you know, it doesn't mean that they have to, right? There have been nations run by dictators who did almost nothing for the people who lived there and pocketed as much of the GDP as they could get their hands on, often ending in, you know, with them fleeing the nation or, you know, people responding to the overt theft of their national wealth. But generally speaking, the size of the economy determines what a nation can do for the people living there. And the size and power of a nation's military is often really a function of GDP, right? In military and defense spending is very expensive, as we all know, living here in the United States. The social safety net that's available for the citizens of a country, for the people living there, not always just citizens, is also a function of the GDP of that nation. And so are all of the other things that government often does. The transportation system and infrastructure, the education system, the healthcare system for just about every nation other than ours, and even ours to a large degree, but just in a different way. And just about everything really does start from the GDP, the gross domestic product of a country, because it determines how much is available, what is the size of the economy. And then, you know, how are the benefits of that economic activity distributed among the folks living there? Interestingly, however, there is a lot of this that seems to be dictated by choice. You know, every country really does it differently. You know, which things get prioritized for spending are choices that nation, well, at least in nations with some form of democracy, People, the voters, the people dictate that to a greater or lesser degree. And it's these choices that I found fascinating as I traveled throughout these three countries in Western Europe. And when we come back, I'll play the first clip from my journey, and then we're going to go back and we're going to start looking at these priorities, the priorities of the nations I visited and ours. And, you know, like I said, I hope this is a fun and interesting journey, a comparison, if you will, about how nations take care of their people, and set their priorities on From the Roots Up. From the Roots Up is community radio that is sponsored by community businesses. If you'd like to join the growing list of folks who make this show possible, reach out to Jenny, J-E-N-N-Y, at khi.com. If you love live music and want to be up close and personal with the band, there's only one place to go, the Torch Club. This hotspot is the place to be with two shows a day, Wednesday to Sunday. Check out the upcoming shows at torchclub.net or just drop by 904 15th Street in Sacramento. The Torch Club. There's always something happening. From the Roots Up is brought to you by The Six Pack. Crack open some change and support the candidates and causes we need in these times. Paid for by The Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
When I was young and full of grace and spirited a rattlesnake, when I was young and fever fell, my spirit, I will not tell you on your honor, not to tell. I believe in coyotes and time as
this week on From the Roots Up, I'm going to be sharing some of my experiences on a trip I'm taking through Spain, France, and Portugal. I've been here about 24 hours now, and in that 24 hours, I had a chance to just, you know, really see and feel the differences. I'm starting out here in Madrid, Spain, and went to the Prado Museum yesterday, which is a celebration of Spanish art for probably, I don't know, about a 500-year stretch of paintings and sculpture. I went to the botanical gardens and experienced the, you know, what they had to offer in terms of public space, public green space, in the center of a large city, a capital city. And after leaving the Prado Museum, I walked into a pro-Palestinian protest that was about 100,000 strong that shut down La Vuelta, which is really Spain's version of the Tour de France. It was the final leg of La Vuelta, and it was to finish here in Madrid. And instead of it finishing, there was a protest of 100,000 people protesting the genocide in Palestine. So it was interesting, you know, having been to protests in the United States, to see the different, you know, sort of subculture of protesting here. It seemed to be much more of a across the board type of person. I don't think you could generalize age or economic situation or anything. The protests here seemed very much a cross-section of Spanish society, such as it is here in Madrid. So that was an interesting thing to behold, and also to see the way that law enforcement engaged with protesters, which I think is you know, different than what I've experienced in the States. It was a little less violent. It didn't feel so charged or dangerous as some of the protests I've attended in the United States, but passionate and energized, and, you know, all the things you would expect of a protest against genocide. And interestingly, I got to watch the media coverage of that afterwards, which I thought was a lot more balanced than what I'm used to seeing in the States as well. You know, I got to see how the media presented what happened, and they were very good about presenting, you know, all sides of the argument, of using the word genocide rather than just saying that people said it was genocide, but actually just using the word as if it was a real thing, which was also very different from what I've experienced in the States. So You know, my first 24 hours outside the U.S. has been very eventful. In fact, far more eventful than I thought it might be. And I'm going to share my experiences here, and hopefully, you know, as I move through various parts of the trip, I'll be able to talk to some people here too, to get their perceptions of things, of world events, of the United States, even maybe. But I will just say this, you know, the first 24 hours here in Spain has been real eye-opening. There is a difference of vibe that I can't explain other than to say people don't seem as stressed out. You know, I'm in a very densely populated part of Madrid, and people are out and in the streets and experiencing life together as you do in a big city. But it felt very calm and relaxed. And I don't know how to explain it other than that. But I think there's something to that. And maybe I'll get to that essence as I travel further throughout Spain and throughout southern France and even in Portugal. And I'm looking forward to sharing that all with you this week on From the Roots Up.
We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack, taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. Crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. If you love live music and want to be up close and personal with the band, there's only one place to go, the Torch Club. This hotspot is the place to be with two shows a day, Wednesday to Sunday. Check out the upcoming shows at torchclub.net. Or just drop by 904 15th Street in Sacramento. The Torch Club. There's always something happening. Continue our conversation about spending priorities, the choices that nations make about how to spend their money. And before we look at the spending priorities of the nations I visited, let's talk first a little bit about our national spending priorities. In the United States, about half of our spending that isn't pre-allocated to programs that have their own special taxes like Social Security and Medicare, about half of that spending that is called non-discretionary, meaning it hasn't been already determined by policy, is allocated to defense spending. That's really overall about one third of all the money our government spends is on defense, of all the money. And like I said, more than half of the money that doesn't include discretionary, you know, non-discretionary programs like Social Security and Medicare, meaning there is an agreement made, you are taxed separately for Medicare and separately for Social Security, and then that money is funneled into those programs and then spent in those ways. Social Security and Medicare, if you want to hear about them, they are about 22% and 14% respectively. But remember, there is a separate tax that provides this money. They're about 22% and 14% respectively of our total spending. So when you add Social Security and Medicare, it's just slightly more than we spend on defense spending in total every year. Now, remember, defense is not separately taxed. You don't have a defense tax on your paycheck, right? It just comes out of the general fund that's paid for and, you know, is out of our general fund. And often it's paid for with deficit spending because that's how we've been going for the last several decades. Everything else we do as a federal government, roads, ports, railroad, national parks, education, farm aid, every single other thing that we do other than defense spending, Social Security, and Medicare is funded in that last 31% of the federal budget. The $1 trillion we spend on defense is equivalent to the total spending of the 9 nations below us in spending. So we're number one in defense spending in the world. Nations 2 through 10 spend about the same amount in total as we spend on our own. So that tells you a lot about our priorities, right? You can think about it however you want, but that's really shows what our priorities are as a nation. Spending priorities in the nations I visited, France, Spain, and Portugal, they differ from us in one huge way. They don't spend such a huge amount on defense. Though it is worth noting that France is in the top 10 in the world. I think they're like 7th. France's top areas of spending are, in this order, pensions and welfare, defense, support for local communities, meaning money that's sent down to cities and towns, etc. And education is their 4th spending priority. So that's kind of, you know, how they divvy it up in terms of their top priorities. Spain's top areas of spending are, in this order, social protection and compensation, education, economic affairs, and general public services. And so, you know, you can start seeing a trend here, right? There's a lot of money being spent on things that that would be in our lower third of the budget, right? The part that I said was outside of the spending for Social Security and Medicare and defense. Portugal's priorities are social benefits, public sector wages, meaning paying employees of the government, and then health and general public services. So, you know, right away you think to yourself, well, what's that do? And if countries are spending their money differently, what's the impact? Well, I'll tell you, you know, from my 3 weeks, about a week in each country, which isn't a huge amount of time, but I did go to a lot of cities in each one and traveled throughout the countries pretty extensively. You know, what I noticed is that healthcare is a right in those countries and everyone gets it. And so you don't see or hear people talking about it as a topic. It's just sort of like the water they drink and the air they breathe. There is an understanding, a contract, that they get healthcare when they need it. And it's not tied to employment. It's just tied to being a citizen or even being there. Like if I had gotten in a car accident or run over as a pedestrian, I would have gotten healthcare there because it's considered a human right. Public transportation and public infrastructure are robust, effective, clean, and functional. There are trains going everywhere. And if you can't find a train, you're likely to find a bus. And sometimes you will have a choice of a train or a bus, depending on, you know, a variety of circumstances. But they are ubiquitous. They come often. It's not difficult to find a schedule, to get information, to purchase a pass. In France, we purchased a 48-hour pass that we could use and get on any one of the trams that went throughout the city we were in, which was Bordeaux. And it was incredibly easy and quick and reliable. And, and I found that to be true in both Portugal and Spain as well. So public transit is a significantly greater part of the social fabric of these countries. And in fact, you know, we did drive a car in Portugal, but it's incredibly expensive to do so. You have to pay lots of tolls on the road. Every so often you just have a toll that you have to pay. The roads are beautiful and well-paved and well-maintained and clean, but they are also paid for with additional tolls while you drive. I didn't drive in either Spain or France, so I can't tell you as much about what the driving is like there, but I did use public transit in all 3 countries. And nobody starves. This is the big one. You know, if you live in the United States and you've noticed that there are a lot of people sleeping outside who don't have a place to call their house, an apartment to live in, that
you see it a lot in the United States. It doesn't matter which part of the country you're in. You're going to see people sleeping in the street and clearly without housing and often food insecure. I didn't see that in any of those countries. And in fact, in 3 weeks, I maybe saw a sum total of like five people who I would characterize as being unhoused, though I didn't go up and talk to them and ask them what their situation was. You know, it was clear to me that that is not considered okay in those countries. It is absolutely clear that housing is available for folks, that everybody has a right to it and gets it, and that food is also a right for folks, and that everybody can locate it and get it as needed. And that's a significant difference. If you get, you know, you kind of almost just get used to being in the United States that you are going to see people in a state of desperation almost constantly. And, you know, I just never, ever, ever saw that while I was there. In a moment, we're going to listen to another one of my audio musings while on the ground in Europe. And I hope you're enjoying this show and this comparison. From the Roots Up is community radio that is sponsored by community businesses. If you'd like to join the growing list of folks who make this show possible, reach out to Jenny, J-E-N-N-Y, at khi.com.
Sarah's calling from a hotel that was built into a mountain. There were diamonds in the fountain. She said that she was happy.
Continuing my journey here across Spain, France, and Portugal. And, you know, I had hoped in my travels that I would have the opportunity to talk to people. So far, that hasn't really presented itself in a way that I could record and share with y'all. But maybe I can share some of the snatches of conversation I've gotten, the snippets, if you will. The snippets of conversation that I've had with you know, service staff and cabbies and folks like that, because, you know, it's really hard to say that that's indicative of the place you are when you're just talking to folks who work in the service industry and various aspects of it. But you do, you know, if you spend some time in a place, get a sense of the feel of it, for lack of a better word, right? And so we've spent 4 days here in the Bordeaux area, mostly in the city itself, and had an opportunity to have conversations with folks, and inevitably, you know, it does turn to current affairs and things that are going on in the world. And in particular, you know, it seems like people here in France are fairly aware of what's happening in the United States, and so conversations ensue from that point of view. I would say that, you know, there's a lot of complicated things happening in the political scene here in France as well. There's definitely seems to be an underlying right-wing populism that is pushing its way into the political scene. There's a lot of unhappiness with the current government they have here. There's, you know, it's interesting how themes that you hear about in the United States, themes like immigration, themes like housing, work their way into the conversation in another country, but it plays out completely differently because, you know, the underlying situation is different. So, you know, when we talk about a rightward push in the United States here, and then somebody says to me, you know, well, we're going to have our rightward push. We're going to have our right-wing populist or fascist administration soon here in France. It's disheartening because, you know, when you look around here, as I said in talking about our brief time in Madrid, you know, people here have it all right in many ways. You know, I guess I think I had a conversation with the guy named David, who was a waiter from the Dakar area in West Africa. And, you know, we were talking about, well, you know, what's he was a big believer in the American dream, by the way. His dream is to go to the United States someday.
And, you know, he said, there's no limit on what you can do in the United States. That's how I see it. That's the dream. That's the way I want to live. And I said, yes, that's very true. You know, we have the world's wealthiest people, and there is an opportunity, although it feels like maybe less than it was when I was younger, to achieve beyond the stars. But, you know, and I had to explain this to him. I said, you know, but the floor is much lower. You know, you don't have health care to stand on. You don't have, as a human right, which is very much ingrained in the society here, you don't have the foundation of housing that is affordable. And even though people talk about housing being a challenge here, you know, I think in my 5 days so far in Europe, I've seen a subtotal of 4 people who appeared to be living outdoors. 4. And I've been to Madrid and I've been to Bordeaux, and those are fairly good sized cities. So I think it's fair to say that the number of people who are sleeping outside is almost none compared to what we see in the U.S. And, you know, he did seem to understand that the idea that the floor was higher and maybe the ceiling is lower here. You pay a lot in taxes, and there's, you know, you have to give into that system. But interestingly, he still believed in the notion of the American dream, the limitlessness of it. And, you know, you never know what your people are going to say to you. And I'm just thoroughly enjoying this process and being able to share it with you. One of the things that's been interesting traveling here in France is we've had more encounters with other travelers. And I remember as a young man, and maybe it's just a difference in my age, but when I was traveling backpacking across Europe as a 20-something, it seemed like everywhere I went, I ran into young people from around the world. However, on this trip, being a more middle-aged person, I'm running into mostly people my age and older who are traveling. And the people I'm running into, by and large, are the sort of upper-middle-class white folks from their country. And the odd and sometimes disheartening underlying support of the rightward tilt of the globe right now was super evident in meeting people from, for example, Australia, and hearing them talk about how they feel like they've lost their Australia, that it's not even okay to wave the Australian flag on Flag Day. And, you know, or people from the UK talking about how protests are ruining everything. And I think to myself, wow, you know, this is not the world I thought I would be living in when I was traveling here first in the 1990s.
This episode of From the Roots Up is brought to you by The Torch Club, Sacramento's premier live music venue every Wednesday to Sunday. Check them out at 904 15th Street in Sacramento or online at torchclub.net. We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack, taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. Crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. I'm hoping that you're enjoying this show. My name, by the way, is Sean Frame, if you didn't catch it up front. And
You know, I hope you're enjoying the sort of experiences that I had traveling in Western Europe. It's not something I get to do all that often. It's not something I've done a lot in my life. And yet every time I go and come back, I am confronted by the differences. And I'm not even really trying to make value judgment. I'm just trying to point out that that there is another way to think about what our society looks like and is. And, you know, maybe in doing so, we can start reimagining what our priorities should be here in the United States as Americans. And, you know, I want you to know that, you know, I am not here slagging the country I live in. I do this show, and the work I've done in my life is really about how much I want my country to be better. It's like when you have a great friend or a partner and you see them doing something wrong, or you see them doing something that could be better. You know, it's about caring enough to let them know in the kindest possible way that they should be doing better. I'm going to share the longest of the segments that I recorded in my travels next. And then when we wrap up the show, I'm going to give you some ideas of things we can do together to make our country better than it is on From the Roots Up.
It's been a while since I've made an entry in my across Europe treks. And here I am toward the end of my journey in San Sebastian, which is in Basque Country in Spain. And we've been many places. We went, well, since I last made an entry, we've been and seen most of the country of Portugal, including the big cities, Porto and Lisbon, and also many areas throughout the country. We've been to Bilbao for a couple days and seen the Guggenheim Museum. And, you know, I give you this as only as a list of places that we've seen, but really this, you know, this show is about the experiences that that we've had and the conversations we've had. I hope to, initially, I thought maybe I would record people, but I think it's sometimes easier just to have those conversations and to sort of share the impressions that I've gotten from people throughout the journey in the three countries we visited, which is Spain, France, and Portugal, and Basque Country, which I think can be seen as a distinct country, even though it's not officially recognized as such. It's culturally different than the, say, Madrid and the rest of Spain. So, worth noting as a separate place. You know, I think I've talked before about the looseness. You know, early on, right? The thing that I noticed that people seem to be less stressed and less concerned about the basics of life, you know. And I think that holds true. It's different in place to place, and it plays out differently. I've also had many, you know, conversations directly about politics, because people here, frankly, when they find out you're American, they almost immediately want to discuss the political situation in the United States and their take on it and how they see it. And interestingly, sometimes there are situations that come up where it's very clear that what's happening in the United States and what's happening in Europe is at least rhyming in some levels. I hear, you know, certain terms and phrases here in the news and in talking to people that sound very much like what we'd hear in the States. You know, we're talking about taking away the social safety net that provides that looseness and that relaxed sort of way of life in Europe that the United States may never have seen. I'm not sure, not in my lifetime, for, you know, but maybe in somebody else's, but certainly not in my own lifetime have I seen that. And so, you know, I guess I should give some impressions of the various places that I visited. That would be helpful, and also talk a little bit about some of the conversations I've had with folks. So, Porto, also called Porto by those who are not native Portuguese speakers, was very much a city, coastal city, very much tourist focused, I would say. You know, there's a lot of history there, a lot of ancient buildings, some going all the way back, you know, hundreds and over 1,000 years in many cases. And also, you know, a modern sense that it's a very touristic place. And so clinging to the hillside on both sides of a river with an industry that's known the world round, port wine, it's a very interesting city. And it took a while to sort of understand what was going on there. Initially, it felt very much like a tourist trap. And then you sort of find the nooks and crannies and alleys and places and people that, that are the heart of the city, and your entire impression changes. And I'm glad we stayed there long enough for that to happen. Leaving Porto, we went intentionally rented a car and were able to drive down the coast and saw just regular cities that people live in and had conversations with folks. We saw an ancient, maybe the oldest university in all of Europe, but certainly the oldest on the Iberian Peninsula. And again, you know, we're struck by this. At the one hand, you see these ancient buildings that have been, you know, educating people for centuries. And then you see, you know, graffiti from modern times. You see students wearing capes as they've worn probably for, you know, centuries at that university. And also students sporting pro-Palestinian anti-genocide gear on that same campus. You know, again, drawing the world together, right? There's things that have been events in Gaza, which don't often make the news in the United States the way they do elsewhere, have been sort of in the background of every place we visited, partially because of the UN meetings that were happening while we were here in Europe, but also in New York, but while we're in Europe, it's making news here. And partially because there's, you know, a feeling throughout Europe that this needs to stop, and it is presents itself in different ways in different countries and different places. But at any rate, that's sort of seeing an ancient university and also modern sensibilities of things tied together was nice. There was something that really felt right about it. And then we drove down the coast and we saw, some of the very wealthy coastal areas outside of Lisbon. We went to Lisbon itself and stayed in a very nice part of town, but it was really part of the old city. So also very intentionally, and I found this very interesting, the streets there are intentionally convoluted to prevent invaders from being able to easily navigate the streets if they were to invade Lisbon through the port. So you immediately, the streets go up hills and go around corners and dead end and randomly places and are very narrow, and the cobbles are rough and were that way intentionally. And all of these were defensive measures to prevent people from invading Lisbon through the port, because Lisbon's been the capital for quite some time. So and Lisbon was very much a fast, you know, modern city, you know, overlaid on an ancient, city background, right? And so you have, you know, tuk-tuks and cabs winding around narrow streets in and amongst streetcars and funiculars, and, it's chaos in every direction, but a beautiful chaos, too. And, again, you know, we got to have conversations with locals and learn about the history and understand that, you know, as recently as 1974, there was a fascist dictatorship that was thrown out by a coup called the Carnation Revolution. And the guy who was driving our tuk-tuk, his own father, had participated in the revolution. And again, you get this feeling of like something that we don't, I think, have in the United States, this notion that history is ancient and it comes in cycles and it's, but you know, that ultimately that people at the core of it should have a baseline a modicum of decency.
Hey, yo, I've been penning the Iliad and the Odyssey. A premonition I really had, it was prophecy. Back in the kitchen, now where we at is Monopoly. The mathematician, I enter the system properly. This officially a Philly joint, once again it's on. I was born ringing alarms like tennis song. My track record is what I ain't got a blemish on, unless I remember wrong. Well, either way, I'm about to finish strong. Redemption songs of a Genghis Khan. Revenge is sworn later on, though the gang is calm. You hit the nail on the head, bro, we don't bang with y'all. Your team different, we don't move with the same decorum. What I reflect is still a real field temperature. Symptoms show I'm physically ill and still emperor. Track whisperer, carbon color conquistador. Kiss the jaws and make him cry, it's not difficult, whoa. A lot of rappers is rolling in fear of chatter. They fall from rock solid, they soldiers, terracotta of my philosophy. I'm the father like Aristotle. I will put an end to your whole saga, you Harry Potter's and saw. Your rhymes EMO, mine's is non-GMO. I'm a vessel, a vehicle, y'all don't see it though. I'm coming for the riches you stole, like King Leopold, and keep the whole world on watch while history unfolds. Hey, y'all.
We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack, taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. Crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Public space in all of these cities, even the ancient ones where it must have been very difficult to carve it out, there's tons of public space. It's available for use, you know, and that's a variety of uses, right? Like you see at the Bilbao, you'll see people, young people skateboarding along the pathway that goes down, the circular pathway that leads to the museum. And then to the left, you'll see an open square. Circular area, right, with the table and bars and a jazz band playing, and adjacent to that is a kids' play area that's enormous, and then there's a park area beyond there for strolling and cycling, and you see this throughout the cities. In Lisbon, you have these kiosks where people come out and they drink a little bit of cherry liqueur with one another, and sometimes dance and spend time just talking and being amongst each other in the public space. And so, you know, Lisbon was the kiosks, and that sort of hipped me to this idea of like, well, what is the public space, and you know, why do we have parks devoid of people in the United States? I feel like we've sort of, it's interesting, we don't have that public, you know, area, common area that's so well defined and so important in civic life in any city that I've been to in Europe, whether it's a small town or a big city. And it's, you can't say it's the media and the internet and social media, because those are all available here and all being used. It's not like I didn't see young people Instagramming their moments at the Guggenheim the same way I would see them doing that at the SF MoMA. It's that there is an idea that a certain amount of time every day should be spent together in conversation and even in argument, but argument face-to-face, right? Which is a different thing than an intermediated argument on social media. Somewhere in there might lie the kernel of the answer of what we need to return to, or to, you know, inculcate in the United States, to bring forward in the United States, to bring people together once again so that we know one another and care about one another because we know each other. Here I am in my, you know, final days here in San Sebastian, which is, you know, very much a resort city, but it's like public squares dominate. And public space everywhere, an enormous public beach with a promenade along it. And from there, you know, government buildings and libraries and museums. And then you go into the old town and it's, you know, bar spaces with people out in the streets and people eating food and talking with one another and shopping and bumping into one another, and people of all ages, from infants all the way to, you know, senior citizens walking with canes and walkers through the area. It's like, these are the things that I think really show a difference. And, you know, I would love to just put a bow on this and say I understand what this all means, but right now I'm just in it and I'm sharing my thoughts as they've come to me. And I suppose, you know, that's what this show is about. It's not about drawing contrast or saying one is better than the other necessarily. It's more about sharing different ways that human beings can organize together and have a society. And that's a lot of what I've taken from this trip, is that there are different ways to think about these things, even in a world that is dominated by, you know, social media and many of the other you know, things that sort of isolate us from one another. It is possible to imagine more and to do more.
What do we do with all of this? What can we do? Well, I think the most important thing we can do is kind of what I've been doing today, which is talking amongst ourselves and in our social settings about what we want in our communities, state, and nation. This is how consensus gets built. It doesn't get built in a vacuum. It gets built by having conversations, real conversations about things we would like to see better, about what our priorities should be. And we need to stop having this notion that these are issues we shouldn't talk about in polite company. If we don't talk about them in polite company, well, they're just never going to get talked about. And if they don't get talked about, we can't do better. Next, we need to start demanding these things that we want, this change in priorities. We need to demand that from our elected officials. And we need to work to make sure the people who support what we want represent us in government. You hear me say this a lot about many different issues, but it is actually the way as long as we still have a democratic republic. In cases where we can start building some of the things we want locally, building models, creating the world we want to see, we should start doing that. We need more. You want more space for kids to play? Get involved in your local parks and rec department. You want transportation options beyond driving? Grab some friends and start demanding these items from your city councils and county supervisors and transportation commissions. Finally, we need to lose the notion that we need to spend an amount equivalent to the next 9 nations on our national defense. We are not at war. And nobody is going to attack us because we're a nuclear state. We don't need to be the world's police. This single priority stands in the way of other things we might do as a nation, because when so much of what we have is dedicated to one single line item in the budget, it leaves no room for anything else. It's all about choices, and we, the people, need to demand that our spending, our choices, reflect our values. Other countries have done it. We can do it too. That's how we get it done. From the roots up. I'm Sean Frame, and I hope you'll join me every week as we delve into a topic like this, and I hope you'll engage me in a conversation. If you want to reach out to us, send an email to fromtherootsupshow@gmail.com.
The sun came up with no conclusions, flowers sleeping in their beds, the city cemetery's humming, I'm wide awake, it's morning. So I hope I don't sound too ungrateful, what history gave modern men. Telephone to talk to strangers, machine guns and a camera lens. So when you're asked to fight a war that's over now,